The 100th psalm, which we chanted but minutes ago, is clearly related closely to the 95th psalm, which we ordinarily sing as the Venite, and so reinforces certain points we mortals need to hear again and again. Psalm 100, however, opens even more dramatically than 95 with a reverberating summons to all the inhabitants of the world, including, of course, us gathered here today. Shout ye to the Lord, all the earth. The Hebrew verb can, to be sure, be used of shouting of any kind, or indeed noise of any kind. It is the ensuing statements of Psalm 100 which have produced the Latin jubilate as the traditional title of the psalm, as well as the delightful wording of the Authorized Version, make a joyful noise unto the Lord. For verse 2 exhorts with exuberance, serve the Lord with gladness, come before him with a ringing cry, using a noun which is restricted to cries of joy. The same ebullience finds expression in verse 4, come ye into his gates with thanksgiving, into his courts with praise, give ye thanks to him, bless ye his name. Indeed, already the superscription describes this song as a psalm for thanksgiving, to be used on occasions of special thanksgiving in the personal and corporate life of the people of Israel. It has specifically been appointed from ancient times to the festivals of autumn, in which the people of God celebrate the harvests of fields and vineyards and arbors. Here we are, accordingly, having entered his gates within the courts of the Lord. Jubilation, however, does not necessarily follow, which is to say, giving thanks to the Lord with true joy. The heady enthusiasm with which many students began a new life in the seminary, or at least a new academic year, is now tempered by the reality of several weeks. The days draw in, examinations begin, more assignments remain unfinished, the bills keep coming, problems emerge in the family, and troubles and fears multiply. The majority of the faculty, on the other hand, having served in the same place for some time, were denied the luxury of even a single week of unrealistic expectations. Now, the Lord of Psalm 100 does not expect jubilation from us in mere obedience to his will. He does not warn us, rejoice ye in grace, or I shall give you a real reason to be sad. Nor does he try to trick us into giddiness through some mantra of meaningless monosyllables. None of his psalms run on thoughtlessly, joy, 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 joy down in your heart. Psalm 100 gives us good reason to rejoice when verse 3 says of the Lord that it is he that hath made us and not we ourselves. It is, after all, forgetting that we have not made ourselves, which leads at most to a temporary smugness and very quickly to anxiety and sadness and despair. It has been, of course, the basic fallacy of all men from Adam on to confuse the roles of the divine creator and the human creature, and it is a genetic disease which has been aggravated by the unprecedented individualism which permeates modern American life in all its thinking and practice. We live in a world which glorifies the self-made man, and so even in the church and even in the ministry, we too would fain be self-made men. We have therefore impressed others with the knowledge we have amassed from much study of many books, or the know-how we have deduced from years of life in the real world. We have astounded colleagues and students and laymen with the brilliance of the new ideas we have conceived and the new practices we have developed. We have brought large numbers of people into the church by means of personal magnetism and ingenious strategies. Often indeed we have made ourselves what we are, and clearly we have made a mess of ourselves and others in the process. Again, however, Psalm 100 reminds us, "Know ye that the Lord is he that is God. It is he that hath made us." These facts themselves could as well be a cause of grief as of joy. They could imply an ultimate woe dwarfing all others into insignificance. For we know also, as we have said, that we have all rebelled against the Lord who created us. Yet he remains the one true God, whose omniscience allows him to see all the sins we have committed, and whose omnipotence allows him to punish us as we deserve. It makes all the difference that in language very close to the Venite, Psalm 100 calls us his people, and indeed the sheep of his pasture. The point is, then, that the Lord who created us now remakes us and continues to take care of us. He is the one true God whose omniscience allows him to see all the needs we really have, and whose omnipotence allows him to tend to them all as only he knows best. For the original singers of this psalm, the sheep of his pasture would conjure up thoughts of care as tender and loving as any father's or mother's. The basis of this divine care is the divine chesed phrased in verse 5. For the Lord is good, his chesed is unto eternity. The English word, as I have maintained before, which corresponds most closely to chesed, is devotion, which is to say faithful love or loving faithfulness. The chesed of God is his devotion to his people, and accordingly to the promises which he has made them. Of supreme importance here is the promise of salvation, which was to be accomplished by the Messiah. For he specifically is the good shepherd whose work is presupposed by the way in which verse 3 calls us the sheep of his pasture. The same presupposition shows up already indeed in the universal invocation of verse 1, "Shout to the Lord all the earth," for the whole world can be summoned to rejoice in this way only on the basis of a universal pardon of the creatures who have forgotten who made them. We heard in the reading how our Lord spoke of his crucifixion as a way of drawing all men unto himself. And the God-man, Jesus Christ, was the only one who could possibly satisfy the wrath of God resting upon all us sinners by his holy suffering and death. Only on this account could all the world have reason to make joyful noise to the Lord. Another 1,000 years came and went from the first singing of this psalm to the declaration of this pardon. But finally, God indeed did fulfill the promises to which he was devoted on behalf of the people to which he was and is devoted. The good shepherd suffered and indeed laid down his life for the sheep. He took up his life again to make us his people once again by declaring all the self-made works of all us self-made men forgiven. This gospel of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ is the central core of the divine revelation phrased in the concluding words of Psalm 100, "Unto age and age is his assurance." In other words, the truth of God centering in the gospel of Christ would be transmitted from age to age down to the end of history and then on into eternity. The truth of God, to be sure, embraces the totality of his self-revelation, the pure doctrine of the prophets and the apostles as a whole. But it would not provide the assurance of God if its nucleus were not the gospel of Jesus Christ. As his, in fact, through faith in the gospel of Christ, he has made us a again the people of God unto all eternity, so that the final verse of Psalm 100 can say of the Lord, with no exaggeration or figure, His devotion is unto eternity. This is the gospel which some of us here today have already been called by the Lord to preach to His people, while most of the others here are aspiring and striving to join us in this work of God in a world of self-made sinners. But in any case, whether preaching the assurance of God or hearing it preached by others, we can all rejoice in His gospel. In good times and evil, we can find abiding joy in His assurance that we are His people and the sheep of His pasture. We can make a joyful noise unto the Lord because He is good and His devotion is unto eternity.